Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us. I think we're going to have a delightful episode tonight. The title is Beyond the Imprint, a new modality for mental health practitioners and those seeking their help. And our guest tonight is Kate O'Connell. We're going to bring Kate on in just a little bit, but I just wanted to talk for a minute about the truth. When we see fake news and when we see people who are not authentic that are pushing their own motivation through the media, in other words, when people have left their heart and they've lived entirely in their ego, you can build a false sense of reality that you end up believing as truth. And the thing about human consciousness is we are very, very powerful divine entities, divine personas. And when we believe something, we can make it reality. We can make it true. In the beginning was the light, and all things, all perceptions, all beliefs came from that light. So when we talk about the truth, the curious thing about the truth is our egos will never know it in an absolute sense, because our egos are symbol processors. When in our family of origin, when we were little earthlings toddling around, our family of origin taught us symbols. They jump-started our ego by teaching us symbols, and they taught us the value of what these symbols meant from their own perception. So you can think of values of symbols. What does that mean? Values of symbols. So what if I was born on a farm and there was a lot of work to be done and there wasn't enough money to hire hands? Perhaps the value of that family dynamic was being a hard worker, being a reliable worker. And in order to walk congruently with the value systems of that family, you would wake up early and get to it and work all day long. And so the value, the beliefs, the truths of that paradigm would be considerably different than perhaps my own upbringing, where the family value system was based on this idea that there's this big-ass God somewhere, and we got to be damn sure we impress this God so we don't all burn in hell. And so the value system there is, are you, speaking of myself, are you perceived as righteous? Do the fellow congregants see you as going to heaven? Does your body appearance look like godly substance? And so the value there is considerably different than that farm scenario. So let's just blow it all open and look at any sentencing, any archetype, any modalities that we want to language. At some point, we could say all of them are true because they've been manifested. They've been brought into form. They've been brought into a belief system that becomes ingrained and unquestionable. But the truth, I suggest, is the light itself, the light of creation itself. Your ego will never know the truth because it only understands things through symbols and the interpreted meaning of symbols. If you want to know the truth, move your thinking down about a foot into your heart. Your heart will experience the truth without language. Your heart will experience the truth and know the truth in an unpronounced way, because your heart is the portal of power dynamic hologram of divine consciousness that we're playing this human paradigm out in. So if you feel stuck because somebody's been blowing some sense of truth in your ear and it's incongruent with what your heart's telling you, take a chill pill and relax. If somebody's been getting in your face and telling you some story about yourself that makes you not feel good about yourself, you can disconnect from that story with confidence. No matter what role that person played, the truth of you is untouchable. The essence of you is out of the reach of human intentions, period. No matter what, no matter what, you are safe. You are safe. And so when you start to move your consciousness into your heart, you start to hear a story, an idea, a dream of your life, of who you are here to be. And to fulfill that authentically, you don't have to give a shit about anybody else's perception on the planet, period. Because when you speak the truth from your own perception, that's the most powerful language that you can conjure up. And what'll break us out of this karmic quagmire faster than anything is people speaking their own authentic truth. And that brings us to our guest tonight, Kate O'Connell. She wrote the book Beyond the Imprint, A New Modality for Mental Health Practitioners and Those Seeking Her Help. She is a child and family therapist with a private practice in Charlottesville, Virginia, addressing the therapeutic needs of children, adolescents, adults, and families. And I'm going to just read off the back of this book, the back cover, and then we'll bring Kate on the show and get into some dialogue. Beyond the Imprint heralds a new paradigm of thinking within the field of mental health counseling, beyond the duality of our unconscious conditioning. Quantum physics is beginning to replace the mechanistic world view of Newtonian physics and is teaching us with every new discovery that we are intimately interconnected with our environment and everything in it. This includes the understanding that we can change what is outside of us by simply changing ourselves. The goal of Beyond the Imprint is for therapists to facilitate a safe therapeutic experience in which the client is able to explore, identify, and dissolve imprinting at the cellular level that has distorted self-identity and informed dysfunctional behavior and relationship patterns throughout the course of their lifetime. Relationship patterns, I like that. Only then can the client actualize their true self and increase their capacity to manifest what they truly desire. Join me in welcoming Kate O'Connell to the show. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Now the book talks about a new modality. If we're going to talk about this new modality, let's lay it out so we understand the context of this conversation. Can you give us a snapshot of this new modality?
Sure. So what essentially it identifies is that everything that we believe and everything that we perceive that informs all of our behaviors in an unconscious attempt to get our needs met is being informed by cellular memory through respective DNA lineages that we inherited at the moment of conception, from the moment that we were implanted at the moment of conception in our first environment relative to mom's stress levels, as well as then what we took on from the moment we were born from our environment. And this is all encoded in the 50 trillion cells of our bodies as unconscious memory that then sets us up throughout life to create relationship patterns and belief systems that we are using primarily unconsciously to to get our emotional, mental, and physical needs met in a way that they were not met through earliest critical stages of development.
Well, I like that. Now, can you give us the background to how you came to be where you are? How did you come into this material? I mean, from the perspective of your life experience as well as your professional experience?
Right. So I grew up in the suburbs of Toronto, and it was a middle-class suburb, but it's very fairly stable parents relative to what that could look like on a spectrum. And despite all of that, I experienced significant trauma, which I was not consciously connected to for the most part as I was growing up, but came to understand this in my 30s when I began a very self-reflective process, and then started to seek out spiritual teachers in the early 90s. After my divorce, moved up to the Adirondacks with my son and lived and studied and trained with a Cherokee medicine woman, then came down from the mountain and went into grad school and got my master's in psychology before coming down to Charlottesville to start to practice. So I came by this material as a reflection of everything that I've ever experienced. And what I came to understand, I was operating from unconsciously in all of my dysfunctional behaviors and relationship patterns. And with my clinical training, I just picked up bits and pieces along the way that all kind of came together when I began my private practice. And I started to just notice a lot of what wasn't working in traditional therapy. And then I started to identify what might work. I know my training in family systems therapy was very influential because that's when I learned to track patterns. So that essentially trained me to have a meta perspective, a kind of be above the concrete and the narrative that was playing out in all traditional therapies, and just start to notice the disconnect that individuals were experiencing relative to what they believed and what was actually occurring.
Nice. Yeah, I think in your book you give an example of a client that had seen a previous psychiatrist for 12 years, and that psychiatrist was retiring. And I don't remember exactly, but your question was, what the hell was going on for 12 years that you didn't get healed? I mean, get some traction with that. So it's curious that you were in the industry, and through that mindfulness, if you will, you were able to discern this new perspective.
Right, and a central part of this thesis is that we cannot leave ourselves out of the equation, out of the experience, in reference to the, quote, expert, the professional, the therapist. Because if we are doing this work, we have to be engaging in a exhaustive process of looking at our own stuff. Our own stuff is always in the room. And if we aren't acknowledging that all the time, then subconsciously we create a hierarchical posturing in the relationship between ourselves, the professional, and the client. And that was the first thing that I started to notice in the work that I was doing. I couldn't help notice how inherently pathological the systems were that are in place to intervene on behalf of individuals who are seeking out their help or who have been designated as at risk, and then how pathological and how unconscious a lot of the professionals are that make up those systems. I mean, it was you had to be in a coma, in my opinion, not to notice the strong correlation. So that's when I started to understand, and I never removed myself from the equation. It was a big impetus in my own healing is that those of us who end up being therapists are unconsciously attempting to rescue ourselves through the
other. Sure.
We want to acknowledge that. That's very important.
You bet. The wounded healer archetype.
Yes, the shaman. Yes.
So, all right. So here I am, a listener. I'm listening to this radio show, and by golly, I spend time on the couch, and I have a psychiatrist, and what you're talking about might be going on in my dialogue. What can a client do as we have this conversation during this episode? What can a client do to recognize if there is a very pronounced stigma that you've been talking about present in the room that might be impeding a much more enlightened approach, if you will, to breaking through the fundamental issues at hand?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. I know exactly what you're asking. One of the things we want to be noticing is that in all likelihood, as the client, you've entered into a codependent relationship with your therapist. And that is typically what is occurring. And it's an ongoing weekly experience in which you come in and recreate your narrative over and over again. So the first thing you want to notice, and it's discussed in the chapter on defense mechanisms, is the narrative is our largest defense mechanism, because it's the story that we've created to ensure that we don't connect to the feeling of these memories that have been encoded in our bodies. And so that's not something that you would be able or allowed to do if you were to be working with me with this modality. I'll listen to the narrative to an extent just to get an idea of the fundamental split that you have, and to some extent we all have, between what we've experienced, how we feel about it, and what we think we feel about it. And that, again, is a form of protection. So we don't judge it, we just notice it, that these defense mechanisms have allowed us to stay in our bodies on the planet and continue to breathe. But at some point, they become our stumbling blocks, because we just end up recreating the same experiences over and over again. You can leave your job, you can leave your husband, but you'll still be recreating these patterns unless you go deeper in your inquiry. So that's one thing you would be noticing if this is, in fact, what your experience is, which is what's usually happening in most traditional therapeutic settings. And just to give you an example, when somebody comes to see me, I've learned over the years just how profound this modality is at creating significant change quickly. So I actually tell people that if they're able to make a commitment of sitting with me every week for 8 weeks, I tell them that their life will change significantly, they will change significantly, and if it doesn't happen, I'll refund their money.
Very nice.
And no one's ever asked for their money back.
Nice. And I like the idea of the fast track to get into the root of this, because like that previous mentioned example, sometimes the monologue, and you say the monologue can sit there and reinforce the stigma. And so to get real traction is to take a fresh approach, and you're willing to do that in a definable, quantifiable 8 weeks. That sounds very compelling. So what are some of the most consistent and challenging issues that individuals are experiencing these days that this modality can effectively penetrate?
The only folks who don't benefit from this modality are individuals who are unable to have an experience in which they are introspective and self-aware. So that's below the age of 12 typically, and yet I've had 10-year-olds in here that are profoundly self-aware. So I will sit with the child and know whether or not they can actually work with this modality. And I work with anybody. So, you know, there's varying degrees that I can bring this modality into the experience, but to work it fully, it would be around the age that metacognition kicks in, which is on average about 12 years. And then the only other individuals who would not be able to fully engage this modality would be individuals experiencing psychosis because of the difficulty of being connected to the self. And so those would be the only folks who would be excluded by working fully with this modality. And everybody else is able to. Now, what I can tell you about what the general pattern/themes are in terms of when you peel all of whatever potential diagnosis might be sitting in front of me, or what the individual's perception of the problem is, that what we're dealing with as it relates to our conditioning within the dualistic paradigm is that we have been conditioned to believe that something outside of us can make us feel better about ourselves. And that is typically what most marriages and intimate relationships end up becoming. And I talk about that in the Dance of Relationship, is that the majority of relationships are codependent, in which you're expecting someone outside of you to show up a certain way in order for you to get your needs met. And that's a setup for extremely dysfunctional relationship, and it reinforces the imprinting. We're always seeking out something in our environment unconsciously to meet our needs in a way that they weren't met during the most critical stages of development. So what this modality does is it shifts the internal paradigm from looking outward to looking inward and starting to understand things like you've created your experience, there are no victims, and the good news is that means you have the power and the ability to create something completely different.
Yeah, there's something that happens with, I suggest, any modality. It as far as a healing modality, I was talking to my acupuncturist, and I said, well, are you a master? And he's like, oh, no, I'm not a master. I'm like, well, what's the difference between you and a master? And he said, well, a master will only use one needle, and there'll only be one visit. And so I said to him, so it's not about the needle then, is it? It's almost like the moment we believe the truth, the dogma, the stigma, the whatever is revealed for what it is, just a story from the past. So as you deal with clients over time, what benefits are you seeing in your own practice with what you're clients are experiencing as a result from this framework of this modality?
Pretty much everything. I'm working the whole span of development. I will say that the adolescents and the young adults can't get enough of this. It is the first time for most of them, probably all of them, where they're sitting with someone who is affirming them and acknowledging them in ways that has never happened before. I have no agenda, and I work every day to ensure that. My agenda, if there is one, is to just show up to the best of my ability on any given day and be the clearest channel that I can be, which is how far can I get out of the way to allow the greatest opportunity to unfold as we sit together as reflections of each other. And the young adolescents and the young adults are just so hungry for this modality, and they change very quickly. And that includes some really challenging presentations, including substance abuse, cutting, anxiety, suicidal ideation. I mean, everything that you can imagine that this demographic is vulnerable to express. What happens, I've noticed, is as I get into folks who are older, you know, there's more conditioning. And along with more conditioning, there's more responsibility. So, you know, they have a harder time of letting go, because that's ultimately all that they're being asked to do, is to let go. And but if you've been playing particular roles as wife, husband, mother, father, executive, those, it becomes very fear-based or anxiety-filled to think about the fact that you might need to let go of some of these roles and some of these narratives and some of these beliefs in order to truly find yourself and give yourself permission to align with who you really are and what it is you really desire, rather than what you bought into. So there tends to be more of a crisis with older folks, because it often can result in the dissolving of a relationship, professional or personal. But with the younger ones who are just trying to figure it out, there's really less risk involved.
Sure, I like that. So the so often with, I guess there's no absolute to it, but like you were saying, the more established people, i.e. older, is they have a sense of identity wrapped around their story. You know, it's like our culture is so driven around events, you know. If go to school, get a degree, come out, get a job, et cetera, et cetera. And when you follow that storyline and then it crumbles in your hands for whatever reason, then it can be, it's like you're feeling the carpet pulled out from underneath you. And to let go of the idea that whatever that story was at all whatsoever, that you as a human being, you as a persona, always have another opportunity to create a more healthier, a more balanced, a more grounded story about who you are as an individual. So when the older client finally does find themselves letting go of what they've held so closely to them as a sense of identity, what do you see in their as a consequence or the benefit from that happening?
Well, a classic presentation would be the parents or parents who bring their child or adolescent to me. And the belief is that there's something wrong with Johnny. He's not showing up according to the script. Those are my words.
Yep.
And if you fix him, we're going to be fine. And
Our story can continue.
I wait till the end of the first session, and I listen, and I nod. And it's at the very end, just before they're ready to leave, when I say, well, it turns out, actually, Johnny's the healthiest member of the family. And I really just need you and your husband to come back next week. And so
I love that.
It is. I have a lot of fun. I do let myself entertain myself. And so what ends up happening with this presentation, which is a very common presentation, is you're pretty much talking about parents in their 40s by the time I get a child in here. And because normally they've navigated the academic system and then it starts to get a little difficult. So at that point, what I'm asking of the parents is to begin to acknowledge that all of their unresolved imprinting is projecting onto their child in an unconscious attempt to get their needs met. They're bringing to the parenting experience their own personal unconscious judgments about all the ways in which they didn't meet expectations, and now it's being, you know, projected onto the child. So I work with them at that level, And the refrain is, as it relates to parenting, is to just go wide. Like, no control mechanisms. It's important the child develop their own internal control mechanism, internal locus of control. So I'm asking them to be counterintuitive in all things, and I'll often get phone calls at 10 o'clock at night that I let go to voicemail where they're screaming into the phone, I can't go any wider. And they do. And after a little bit of turbulence, they actually end up having the results that they've always desired because they've given the space that's required for the child to start to be able to develop an internal guidance system and make choices. And yes, they'll stumble, but it's only through that experience will they actually be able to develop the ability to make appropriate choices. And so that is a pretty consistent presentation. That one usually takes about a period of 6 months before things start to really show dramatic results. And that's always going to be determined by the parent's ability to let go. So everybody brings their own sort of quality of foot on the accelerator, foot on the brake, and on and off. And sometimes both feet are on the accelerator, and sometimes both feet are on the brake. And that's a pretty common presentation across the board.
Sure. Yeah, I could totally see that. Well, let's shift our perception of what we're talking about here towards what you talk about in the book, and that's energy medicine and DNA, and let's look at the new side of the modality from what you've written about here. Can you give us a snapshot of the new ground that your book covers?
Sure. So there's been an ongoing debate, as long as I'm aware of, in the field of psychology called the nature versus nurture debate, in which some people believe that genetics determined the individual's experience throughout life. Other people believe that it was the environment. So we have this still emerging field of epigenetics that Bruce Lipton brought to the layperson in his book Biology of Belief, where we started to understand just how much of an influence and impact that our environment has on us, and that it in fact changes our DNA. And studies and research have talked about the fact that they'll take a DNA sample from a donor, put the sample in a vacuum sealed container, put it in a different room than the donor, and then the donor will be exposed to various stimulus that would have either a fear-based response or a very joyful, loving response. And simultaneously, it's been observed that the DNA responds to those various expressions, emotional expressions. And so we absolutely do know that our environment impacts our DNA. What I talk about in the modality is that we are, how I describe it, is we're genetically predisposed to what we could manifest emotionally, mentally, and physically as a dis-ease expression in response to chronic stress and trauma that we've experienced throughout childhood. And depending on how extreme that is, it will determine at what age we manifest such an expression. So that could be, in my case, it was an aggressive autoimmune disorder at the age of 12, but in other people it could be psychosis, depending on what you're genetically predisposed to. And in the modality, I've actually added one more piece to that, because what I've come to understand, and again, it does relate back to this research that I just mentioned, is it's actually our response to what's happening in the environment that determines what happens to us, whether that experience is even encoded as memory in our body. So when we're feeling overwhelmed at a very young age about something that's outside of us that we have no control over, we are essentially in opposition. It's a biological response to what's occurring. And in being in opposition to what's happening outside of us, that experience is now flash frozen in the frequency of fear and encoded in the 50 trillion cells of our body. And so that's how the memory ends up being encoded in our body. And then when stimulus shows up in the environment that is in resonance with those memories, we become activated. And then in our activation, we then reinforce these memories, and then we continue to cycle through these experiences, which is why you'll see people having chronic experiences of trauma. And it gets acted out in relationships, and sometimes it could be as concrete as just accidents, you know, repetitive car accidents and things like that, because we're attracting these experiences to us through our vibrational frequency that's being determined by our wounding. And so we take all of that apart with the modality, and we start to talk about the ways in which we can create space between the stimulus and the environment and our reactivity and activation in response to the stimulus. And the more space you create, then the less likely you will be to reinforce the imprint and therefore unconsciously keep cycling through it.
Yeah, I noticed that. My mom passed away of cancer, and at some point I realized, no, she didn't die of cancer. She died of a broken heart, and it showed up as cancer. And I think a lot of times when we assign the label of a hereditary disease, it's actually passed from generation to generation in the psychosis of the neurotic household, and the DNA is just following along. It's not the creator of the disease, it's the reflection of the disease. And for the idea that it's hard welded, you know, set in concrete in the DNA is almost laughable, in the sense that our divine consciousness has no limits or tether over what part of our belief system we can alter with when we so choose to.
And how that shows up in the physical, and I'll just share with you and your listeners that you had asked earlier about how did I arrive at this modality, and I realized I'd left out an important piece, is that in being diagnosed with a severe autoimmune disorder, and the prognosis being that I would be in a wheelchair by the time I was 18, that this was the beginning of me getting beyond the duality of my conditioning, because there was just something so innate and so deep in me that knew that I was not going to follow even the energetic vibration that was delivered in that prognosis, that every aspect of my being was going to ensure that that was not going to be the outcome. And so I did a lot of interesting things to ensure that that wouldn't happen in my early adolescence, in which I used a lot of recreational drugs to not feel the pain associated with this very debilitating disease, took up skiing, did extreme sports, and that got me to a place further down the road in terms when I became more mature, in which I stopped the recreational drug use and sought out holistic alternative modalities within energy medicine. So fast forward, I'm 56, I'm missing bones in my body, mostly in my feet, and I hike about 2.5 miles a day, and I'm not taking anything for pain. So I've somehow gotten beyond the limitations of the physical laws of this dimension. And that's what helped reinforce my understanding, just as you identified, that we don't have to be at the effect of a lot of these linear belief systems, and very limiting belief systems, that we don't have the ability to get beyond. And one of the things I tell people a lot when they sit with me is, on your drop-down menus, you know, if we typically think we have maybe one of two choices, I say, you know, please give yourself a lot of choices on your drop-down menu, even if it doesn't, at first glance, seem possible.
Sure. Well, where do you see this going next? I mean, what's next with this?
So that's a great question. There's a lot of things happening. I realize now this is the first of three. It's a trilogy. The next two are going to be much smaller, but the second one is called Getting Beyond the Imprint. It's the guidebook for therapists. It will teach you how to do this. And for clients, it will teach you how to take yourself through it. And the third one is the spiritual framework, so that when we're talking about imprinting, that's karma. It's neutral. It's just memory. And so it will start to talk about everything that we've talked about in the clinical framework, but in the spiritual framework, because the absence of imprinting is enlightenment. So I'll talk about that. Those will be much smaller. So the second book will be done by the end of 2018. The third be done by the end of 2019. But then I realized that the modality is much bigger than me. So I created a nonprofit called the Healing Alliance of Central Virginia. And a lot of incredible things are happening. I'm going to change hats, and I'm going to move away from individual work to work with large groups, including people who do what I do and want to learn how to do it. And this nonprofit is going to be working with individuals in our community who otherwise would not have the ability to pay to access these kinds of modalities. And so that's starting to happen in coalesce, and it looks like it's going to be pretty big. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, I get a real strong whiff of you as this really big-ass divine angel. I do. I'm just telling you. And the Healing Alliance of Central Virginia is just the beginning of because you understand your modality, your brain understands modality, and it's no longer afraid. And when the ego has stopped reacting in fear, the big ass soul, the mother of all mothers, the divine essence of you can descend into your body and be embodied in you as you. And through this Healing Alliance, you're looking at the collective consciousness. And your wand will be the compassion of your heart that comes out through your words. And real big stuff's coming down the pike for you. So I really celebrate this. So what's the goal of people participating within this framework that you've created of this modality? What's the goal?
That we heal, that we get beyond our limitations, and as we awaken, this facilitates and accelerates the paradigm shift that's occurring on this planet. So this is just another mechanism to help individuals awaken and get beyond the duality as expressed through conflict and competition, and we can get beyond the pain and suffering that has been so inherent in the physical experience and move into a far more inclusive, holistic experience of the pleasure and the awe of what it means to be physical. We came here to really have a profound experience, and this allows us to get beyond our unconscious limitations that get in the way of us accessing the abundance that is manifest in this dimension.
So what you're saying is your compassionate heart is giving you no choice.
Yes, and yes, thank you. And the interesting thing is that I've been working consciously through lifetimes and lifetimes of experiences when I presented to the collective something that it wasn't ready to hear, that it did not end well for me. And so I'm very aware of my maturity / healing being like so integral and integrated in being able to bring this, first of all, allow it to come through me. I channeled it for sure. And then to allow it to come forward. And it's not that the material hasn't consistently presented itself, but how I am is very different. So as I heal and as I align, I'm less likely to become activated and defensive in response to the reflections and projections that might come as a result of some people might not be ready for this. I've been investigated. The largest entity in this area is UVA Child and Family Psychiatry, and it filed a formal complaint against me when I just began my private practice and started talking about some of these things, and they referred to the essay on my website called Normal, and that's the first time that I actually stated that we have undertaken the largest social experiment in history by, you know, chemically restraining our youth when their behaviors do not conform to this narrowing bandwidth of what normal is. And so that was my first experience, and I forced myself to work with this modality, even though it was quite new, in knowing that under no circumstances could I be reactive in my response. So I waited 24 hours, called the senior investigator who was responsible for giving me my license, and said that I was going to hand deliver my license to them because I couldn't participate in a system that was so easily manipulated. And sure. I said it with complete neutrality, like I was totally willing to do that because I recognized that it was worth doing that rather than try to defend myself from any projections might come. And as a result, within 2 weeks, they closed the case. And I know that that was the beginning of me learning how to respond differently to these projections, which were just happening because I was carrying the memory from lifetimes and lifetimes. So always taking ownership for even the most unwelcome and painful things that might show up. And here we are.
Well, it's really curious because I think what you've touched on is common to a lot of people, where the past life memory is, if I stand in my truth, I'm going to get my ass kicked. And in a very ungraceful way, in a very disturbing way. And the new paradigm in this paradigm on this planet, doesn't mean it applies to all cases, is that your heart and your soul will look into the future and give you the life path where that doesn't happen. But your ego has to stay connected to your heart and your soul in order for that to play out. And what I was saying earlier, your ego's got to get over the fear of it. And then you can show up.
Right, exactly. So these projections cannot show up if we are not carrying within us the belief that what's being projected onto us is true.
That's right. That's
the key right there. So I teach people to just know in that moment, even as painful as it can be, that you are just being shown with these projections what you're holding on unconsciously about yourself that's true. And then you have the ability to let that go. And then in doing that, you can get to the place where you can bring something forward like this. And
sure.
And you can't be touched, like you said. And actually, there's a tipping point in which the projections that are happening now is just beyond anything I could have imagined around how can I help? How can we help? And will you help us? And it's just become this like magical ride, like riding this energetic wave that's above the fear-based frequencies. It's a totally different frequency. There's no effort involved. It's really, can you get out of the way? Can you let go? Can you trust? Can you just say thank you and watch what happens?
Yeah, and let your big ass self, that big soul, that divinity that knows no fear, come down and drive your language and cast your vision. And you got some really big stuff coming down the pike for you. Hey, we're almost out of time, and I want to be totally sure that our listening audience knows how to connect with you, what modalities you have, one-on-one, online. Really lay out how to get a hold of you and what services you offer and how to engage you.
Sure. So I have a clinical website, which is my name backwards, O'Connell, O-C-O-N-N-E-L-L, Kate, K-A-T-E.com. And then the Healing Alliance of Central Virginia's website is HACVA.org. And through both of those platforms, you can connect with me. It has all of my contact information. Find out more about what I do, about what's happening next with the nonprofit. We have the fundraiser on the 8th of October at the property that we have a contract on right now. And that's going to be incredible. We're going to have horses. I'm going to be doing Sweat Lodge, Vision Quest. I am so excited, and so I anticipate that we'll be moving in by the end of the year and opening our doors for business in January.
So is your practice in person? Do you do anything online?
I've been doing some over the phone. I don't do Skype. I haven't yet. And the thing is that I'm phasing out of the individual work to do the group work. However, it's a transition, so I'm hesitant to say no to anyone, but just see how things evolve. And certainly for any therapists that are listening, I'm going to be wanting to teach therapists and connect them to this modality. So that's definitely something that I would want people to be thinking about if they're curious how to integrate this modality into their practice.
So who's your ideal client? I know you've just talked about moving away from individual, but when you look at this, who's your ideal recipient of this material?
Well, everyone can access it, and it works for everyone with the two exceptions that I mentioned. However, what I've also identified is that if this modality were used exclusively with adolescents, it would change everything and quickly. And so I've identified off the top of my head that the two groups that I already know that I'm going to be running simultaneously weekly in the nonprofit location is going to be a group of adolescents once a week and a group of their parents once a week.
Oh, very nice. Well, if we raised a single generation that knew the truth of who they were, most of this stigma crap would just fall to the wayside.
And they get this stuff quickly and the changes. I have sat with kids who have had years of really significant substance abuse, and within 8 weeks, I'm sitting with a completely different child.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
It seems like our soul chooses a life path with a whole bunch of alarm clocks in it, i.e., train wrecks, to sit there and, you know, we're going to bang our head on the railroad tracks until we become conscious and sit up and take notice. And like you say, in such short orders, some real deep stigmas can be overturned in a pretty short period of time. Well, we're almost out of time. Do you have any closing thoughts for us?
I would be asking listeners to just start to notice as they move through their day, in their relationships and in traffic, how much of them are reliant on someone outside of them to show up a certain way in order for them to feel good about themselves, and use that as the opening. That's the door you want to walk through to start thinking differently about how you can get your needs met, starting with yourself, by practicing primarily self-care, which is the fundamental expression of self-love. So be nice to yourself, treat yourself, nourish yourself at every level, and to the best of your ability, enjoy yourself and have fun.
Well, Kate, the compassion of your heart is quite evident, and it shows up in your actions and your compassion for humanity. I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, and I want to thank you for being our guest on the show tonight. It's been so delightful.
Thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. It was delightful.
We've been talking with Kate O'Connell, and the topic tonight has been based on her new book, Beyond the Imprint, A New Modality for Health, Mental Health Practitioners and Those Seeking Their Help. I want to showcase or point out that I recommend this book for practicing mental health professionals. I strongly recommend this book for mental health practitioners, because Kate really takes a deep look at the industry, and she's not afraid to call a spade a spade. And I think that kind of blunt, clear perception of stigmas in industries like her own are going to be the kind of things where you, whatever role you're playing in your vocation, it seems like karma has penetrated so many aspects of our collective culture. When you are participating in an industry and you recognize some of the fundamental incongruencies in that industry, it's when we all collectively make a change, make a shift in our own consciousness, that the whole ocean changes direction, that the whole paradigm loses its grip, if you will, from the karmic momentum of the past. It's always a good idea to take the time to figure out who you are, the mechanics of what make you tick. When you practice cleansing, purifying yourself, coming to understand the essence of who you are, which is a divine, beautiful being, having a human experience on this most incredible chapter of our human story here on planet Earth, the path your life takes has no limitations to it other than the ones you bring along. So when you're willing to let go of your past and truly open up to your own heart and your soul, when your little self, when your ego self says to your heart and your soul, what the hell can we be doing for the rest of our lives that has a powerful influence? You're going to be surprised at just where that can take you. You can be a powerful player. You can be a powerful player on this planet. And there's something that's really totally cool when that happens, is because basically what you're doing is you're bringing love. You're bringing love to the story of fear. And when you bring love to fear, it's revealed for what it is. It's a standing wave of human consciousness with no particular power of its own. So you've shown up for yourself just by listening to this episode, and I applaud you for that. I'm Les Jensen, your host. It's been my good pleasure spending this time with you. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This has been a New Human Living radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.